All right, morning, everyone.
Morning.
Hey, real quick, I want you just to stand up where you're at. Just stand up, and if you have a little space where you can scoot in, because we're going to do a last service selfie right now, all right? So scoot in if you can, because you want to be in this picture. All right, everybody get in there real tight, real tight. Look happy. Look happy we're here. All right, everybody wave, smile. Here we go. All right, you guys did great. Good job. And this is proof you were here too. All right, so. Well, I don't know if you heard, but this is our last Sunday here as a portable church. And next week we have the mother of all grand openings. All right, so you want to be here if you can, bring your mom. If you can't, think about your mom. We're going to celebrate moms. We're also going to have the mother of all grand opening. We're really excited about that. I also want to tell you, you're going to want to be here next week because it is going to be one of those Crossing classic services. Now, I'm not saying that just because it's going to be in a new building, but I'm saying it because already just knowing what the flow and what we're praying is going to happen during the worship service, I think it's going to be an incredible, very moving service. I mean, I'm thinking it's going to be one of the most, all I can say is you want to be here. Now, I know a lot of you are coming anyway, but you're going to want to be here. You're going to bring friends, bring family, bring people who are wanting to check Jesus out, wanting to investigate him, because it's safe to investigate Jesus here. It's safe to not go all in, buy all in right here. So bring people out and come thirsty, all right? So I'm not going to say any more about that, but come thirsty. Next Sunday is going to be the very first Sunday for everybody up there. I mean, you've been there for the Eve service, but maybe you know we've never been there for a Sunday morning. So if this will be the first Sunday for all of us. So what I thought I would do is just run through a couple little housekeeping kind of announcements, kind of get you ready before we get up there. One more quick thing, and I think Jay mentioned it, but if you can stay after church today to help us, we're going to load up everything, put it up in that big yellow truck out there, and move it on top of the hill so we don't have to come back here tomorrow. Nothing against Williamsburg High School. They've been fantastic. But if you can stick around, that would be great. Now, we have no idea how many to expect next week. I know there's going to be all of us. I know there's going to be a lot of people who are just curious. I know there's going to be a lot of people who've heard about us. And there's going to be people who are going to come next week because they're allergic to anything portable. Because we're a real church now. We got a building, all right? So there's going to be those people who it's like, I'm not going to go to some place like, you know, where you can't find them. So we don't know how many we're going to have next week, but there's a couple things I want you to know. First of all, as Jay said, we could use some help because we've only had really 13 days, and that's counting this coming 7 days. This is Life Change moved all their stuff out last week. So we have a very short, very narrow window to be ready for this. So we could take all the help we can get, whether, as he said, you can do some cleaning, sweeping, all that kind of stuff. But because we've had that very narrow window, a lot of things we hope to have ready is not going to be ready. For example, if you have a kid that's in the first through fifth grade, the elementary school class is first through fifth, that building's not going to be ready. So what we're going to do is, let me get out my handy dandy pointer here. See that building there? If you can go back to the previous one, this is the brick building. The offices are on the bottom, but right here is that building right there, all right? So this will be the elementary building, but it's still in a kind of a demolished state, and it will not probably be ready until week two or maybe even week three. It's going to be incredible when it's ready. It's going to be awesome. Your kids are going to love it. But for now, if you have a first, second, third, fourth, fifth grader, they're going to walk carefully across the parking lot and go up here to the second floor. That's where they're going to be. That's normally going to be where our teens meet, but our teens are not going to be able to meet there. So next week, if you're a teenager, middle school, high schooler, you're going to actually get to sit with your mom, whether you like it or not. All right, so you're going to sit with your mom, and you're going to act like you like it, all right? And then the second week, we're not sure where they're going to be. They may meet in the barn. They may meet in the barn over here, they may meet under a tent, or they may be parking your cars as part of the valet ministry. I don't know, but that's where the teens are going to be, so keep that in mind. But be patient with us. you know, over the next few weeks, kind of continue to do what you normally do here. You normally smile and you're very patient. But if you give us any grumpy cat looks, we're sending you back here to this church to worship by yourself at Williamsburg High School for 40 years. You will continue to wander in this wilderness for 40 years. So you come and no grumbling, complaining, no saying, oh, I wish we could go back to Portable, because we're not going back to Egypt, all right? And if you want, so anyway, I hope I made enough about that. Speaking of parking, there is going to be, it's going to be crazy because it's a new parking lot system, new flow. We've got a parking lot ministry that's going to be like Top Gun. They're going to be parking you, and so, you know, don't run over them. But if you do come next week, don't look like this guy, all right?
Jesus, I am late for church. I'm just going to speak this parking spot into existence right now. Just name it and claim it, Jesus.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, use the crosswalk.
Okay, I have the fruit of the Spirit, but y'all need to move. Ooh, she is going to wear that into bounce your eyes. Bounce your eyes. Jesus, give me a miracle. I need a ram in the thicket. I love this church. It's just like come as you are. You know what I'm saying? How do I look, though? Does the jacket go with the shirt? Oh, good Lord. Guests, single parents, expected mother. Who doesn't have a parking spot these days? I have been here 27 years. I deserve respect. Oh yeah, go ahead, take my parking spot. She probably needs Jesus more than me, honestly. Use your mirror. How long does it take to back out of a... Jesus, give me strength. This is so honestly, there better be coffee. There better be coffee. Y'all are gonna make me park in a handicap spot.
Oh look, there go the homeschoolers.
I swear if somebody took the last jelly donut, I will. Don't make me get out of the... Oh, move
that... Hey, aren't you on the ministry team?
Not today, okay? Oh, you're gonna drive a Lexus? Okay, I know where your treasure's at. Not in heaven. The sermon series is what? Putting others in front of yourself. Oh, this doesn't apply to me. I mean, for heaven's sakes, move out of the road.
Look at this truck. Where are you going? A church or a Trump rally?
Finally found a parking spot 15 minutes late. Oh, it is way too cold out here, but you better bring a shuttle or I will watch this service online.
So, don't be that guy, all right? Don't be that guy. But seriously, if you look at the parking there, there's like 200 plus spaces and all that stuff. But what I would like to say is notice this really, really cool gravel parking lot down here. We actually now have a sidewalk thanks to a very generous donation. There's a sidewalk that connects all the way there. And this is really cool. So if you are a leader, if you lead a team, if you're on staff, if you are like young and in great shape, or you have a car that loves to go off-roading, all right, any of those, then if you could park down here, that would be really helpful. So we keep lots of spaces up here for our first-time guests, for our people who are a little bit wiser in years, you know, wisdom, for expectant mothers, small children, stuff like that. So again, I guess the best thing to say is not just next week, but every week. Here's something we like to try to practice here, and that is an others first mindset. So if you can continue to have an others first mindset when you come and not take the best spots and give them up to someone else, that would be great. So just kind of keep that in mind. Also, a couple other things. I know next week it's going to be stressful, so come early. You're going to want to come early so you can check your kids in. It's going to be a whole new system, so you're going to come about 15 or 20 minutes early to check in your preschoolers, to check in your elementary kids, and so on. You're also going to want to come early because I know that it's going to be stressful for you because you've been sitting in this seat for 2 years, and you're going to have to pick out a new one. I know that's going to be stressful for you, so you're going to want to come early because here's the thing I know about you all, and I've been, you're creatures of habit. We don't need to give you assigned seats. You just naturally sit in the same kind of area. That's why I know if you're here or not, because I look, nope, they're not here. You know, but... So next week's going to be brand new. You're going to want to come out, and you're going to want to say, oh, I like this seat. Oh, no, I like this seat. And you're going to be running all around and go, ooh, look at this seat. So some of you are going to be stressed. Some of you will be a little snippy. So come early so you can get your seat because we've averaged changing locations about every year and a half to 2 years, and we hope this one's going to be a while. So choose wisely, if you know what I mean. But don't come in there the next week and say, hey, get out of my seat because we don't do that at the crossing, all right? So kind of keep that in mind. All right, the last couple things I just want to say is one of the core values of this church has always been flexibility. And that's what I love about this church. And so continue to be flexible with us. Continue to be patient with us. Continue to give mercy and grace and all that stuff. And just continue to be a part and be who you are. The location of this church may be changing, but the heart and the attitude of this church is moving with us. And that is what I love about this church. I love this church. I'm not kidding. This is a very, very honest moment. This, by far, is the greatest gathering of people that I have ever been associated with. I love this church, and I'm so proud to be a part of it. And as Jay called the audible, I'm over there bawling my eyes out, because in the last 6 years, I would have never imagined we would have such a gathering of people, that God would create a collective of people here that loves him and loves people. And just, man, I love you all. And I cannot wait to see what is next for us. So come expectant, because God is in this, God is on the move, and God is just getting started with us, in us, and through us. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Now, over the last couple weeks, we have been in a series called The Greatest. In the very first week, Easter Sunday, we talked about the greatest comeback of all time, and that is Jesus when he resurrected from the dead. And then 2 weeks ago, we had an all-pro great football player from the Cincinnati Bengals, Cedric Pierman, with us, and I want to congratulate Cedric, because he and his wife Hagar just had twins this past week. Ava and Isabel now have joined their little brother Emmaus, so he's a happy daddy, and so congratulations. But it was just awesome to hear a great Cincinnati Bengal share the gospel and share how basically he was dead in his transgressions, but because of Jesus Christ, he is now alive in him, and so that was awesome. And then last week we talked about what is known in church circles as the great commandment, and that is to love God and love people, but we kind of took it from the standpoint of you can tell an awful lot about the person based on the questions they ask. And so we talked about the question being asked is, what is the greatest commandment? And why is it that we want to know that? And hopefully love trumps law every time, that we want to know it because we love them. But today, we're going to finish this whole series out by what I believe is the greatest commencement speech ever given, and it is found in the Bible. Now, interestingly enough, this is Graduate Sunday or Commencement Sunday. We're going to actually promote our kids, and we're going to recognize some of our senior graduates from high school at the end of the service here. But all across this region, all across this country, there are graduation services or commencement services taking place. Now, here's the thing. Those two words mean something completely different. To graduate or to have a graduation is to look back. When you're having a graduation service, you're looking back at how far you came. You're looking back at the things that happened in your past. You're graduating, and so you're looking in the back. But commencement, the word commencement means to look ahead, to look forward, that this is a new start, a new beginning. And so what I think is really interesting today, as we talk about the greatest commencement speeches, as we stand here right now, we are graduating in this sense as a church family, because we certainly are looking back at how God has been blessing us and he has been good to us over the last 6 years. But we are also experiencing a commencement, because next week is a new start, new beginning, new chapter, and we have no idea what this blank slate of paper, this blank whiteboard is going to look like, because it's just an exciting, fresh beginning. And so we're going to celebrate graduation, but we're also having a commencement Sunday here as we start next week. But when it comes to commencements, if you've ever been to a commencement, some of you are getting ready to go through one, some of you have been through one, they have certain speakers that come, and they're the commencement speaker, the graduation speaker, and some are just flat out boring, some of them miss the mark, and then there are some that actually get remembered because of what they said, because of a nugget of wisdom, whatever. Let me give you a few famous commencement speakers. In 1941, Winston Churchill told the students of Harrow School, never give in, never give in, never, 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 in nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in. The boys he was addressing in that graduating class were about to join into World War II. And so what Churchill was basically saying to all those graduates out there that were getting ready to be called up is, don't quit, never give in. And it was a pep talk to help them through what was to come. In 1963, President JFK, John F. Kennedy, gave the commencement speech at American University. Kennedy had just gone toe-to-toe with the Soviet Union during the Cuban Missile Crisis, but his heart yearned for peace, and so he said, I realize that the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, but we have no more urgent task. I hope history's not repeating itself. Mother Teresa spoke at Niagara University in 1982. She spoke about the poor, as she always did. That was her life. She said, love the poor. Do you know the poor of your place, of your city? Find them. Harvard hosted J.K. Rowling, who wrote the Harry Potter books. And Rowling's early life was filled with failure, and so she told all those smart kids in the audience, it is impossible to live without failing at something, unless you live so cautiously that you might as well not have lived at all, in which case you fail by default. Each speaker, in their own way, said something that hit a nerve. Each one of them hit something, said something that marked a moment that has been remembered even long after their speech was spoken. One talked about victory. One talked about peace. One talked about taking care of the poor. And one talked about taking risks and not being afraid to fail. Well, what I want to look at today is known as the greatest commencement speech ever. It's found in Matthew chapter 28. So if you'll turn to the New Testament, the very first gospel of Matthew, and you go to the very last chapter, the very last page, most likely, of your Bible, of Matthew, that is, you will find Matthew chapter 28, verses 16 through 20. And you will find that as Jesus is about to address the first graduating class of, we'll call it 33 AD, as he's about to address the graduating class of these disciples who've been going to the school of Jesus, the school of Jesus ministry, you'll see that his required risk, it required taking care of the poor, it required peace, it talked about risk, peace, battling the enemy, and so much more. But if you look at Matthew chapter 28, verse 16, it says this. And now you have to understand in context, this is when this has happened, is if you look at the very beginning of chapter 28, Jesus is resurrected. There's another little section in 28 where it talks about basically the Roman guards and the Roman leaders came up with a plot to kind of say his body was stolen. And then all of a sudden now the 11 have been called to a mountaintop in the Galilean region, which is where Jesus did a lot of his ministry. So they're not in Jerusalem anymore, but the resurrection has taken place. And it says the 11 disciples traveled to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had directed them. And when they saw him, they worshiped, but some doubted. Now, I could go a whole long way on that alone, that it's amazing to me that in that same sentence, after all that had taken place, that there is Jesus, the one that they had seen on a hill being crucified, is now on a hill, alive and well, and it says they worshiped him, but some doubted. So for those of you who struggle with doubting, well, join the crowd, get in line. I mean, if you're going to doubt then, I guess you're going to doubt. So what we see there is they doubted. Now, it's interesting that the Greek word for doubt in this case is distazo or distazo. It means this, that they're going two ways or they're shifting between positions. That's what the Greek word there for doubt is. And it's mentioned one other time in the book of Matthew. It's used one other time in Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 through 33. Where Jesus, after just getting done feeding the 5,000, tells the disciples to get into the boat and go to the other side. And he goes up. He doesn't join them. He goes up to pray on a mountaintop for a while. And then about the middle of the night, he comes walking across on the water. Many of you are familiar with this story. And at first they think it's a ghost. But then Peter's like, Jesus, if it is you, then call me out. And so Jesus is like, well, come on. So Peter gets out and he starts walking on water. And then he sees the winds, and then he sees the waves, and then he sees Jesus and the winds and the waves and Jesus, the winds, the waves, and Jesus, and realizes, whoa, this shouldn't be happening. And so he begins to sink. And Jesus says to him, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Same word that's happened here in late Matthew now is some of them doubted. In other words, their minds are shifting. Their position shifting. They're all over the place. It's going two ways. They're shifting between. And I believe what was happening is it wasn't they were struggling with the idea that he was alive because he was right there. I don't think they were struggling with the idea that he was worthy of their worship because resurrection is a pretty big thing. I think it was more of a situation where they're shifting back and forth, but where he's dead, now he's alive. We are doomed, now we have hope. In other words, do you see what's going on in their head? They had to be thinking, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And now he's here. Now he's here. We've been hiding out. We're doomed. We got no hope. And now he's here. You can see the shifting of positions mentally and emotionally and physically, all that going on. And so they're doubting. They had to be experiencing the spiritual whiplash on that mountain. They were recovering from disappointment. After all, it didn't play out the way they hoped. What they expected was Jesus to come and sit on that throne and rule and to bring order back to the temple of God. They expected him to come in and clean house and kick butt and take names and to become the ruler that the people of Israel had been waiting for. And daggone if he didn't go and get himself killed. That is not what we had in mind. That's not how we imagined it playing out. And so this is what's going on with them. And now all of a sudden, instead of receiving the crown of jewels, he receives the crown of thorns, and he's crucified, and he's dead, and now they're scattered all over the place. Some have denied him. They have no idea. They're in fear, quaking in their sandals when all of a sudden, they're being invited to a hilltop in Galilee. And so the 11 gather there, and there he is, alive and well. Can you see the spiritual, can you see the whiplash that had to take place in their emotions? So no wonder they had doubt. No wonder they, because what they're basically doing is they're sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, this is not what I expected. Now what are we going to do? Now what? What's next? You know, it's amazing, during this time of year, there's a lot of graduates that ask the same question. What's next? Now what? And if they were honest, they struggle with a little bit of doubt. I mean, they think they know where they're going. They think they know they have a plan. But in the back of their mind, if you were to really strap them down and put a lie detector test on them, they'd probably say they're scared, they're nervous, they're not sure. What if I do the wrong thing? What if I go to the wrong place? What if I pick the wrong school? What if I pick the wrong branch of service? They're worrying. What's next? I had the privilege to be able to speak at both of my daughter's commencements and to give the address, and like all the other commencement speakers, I was boring too, I'm sure. But I got the chance in the class of 12 and the class of 13 to share. And one of the things I shared a story in the very first one I did, when you do it back to back, you kind of have to change it up a little bit because they're siblings and things like that. But I talked about this occurrence, this thing that happened in a Greyhound race. Now, I know yesterday, you know, they had my old Kentucky home, they had the Derby and all that. But there's actually a thing out there called Greyhound racing. Now, I'm not going to ask you who've been there, because a lot of you be like, you know, and then others be like, that's so cruel and inhumane, and you get in a scuffle out in the parking lot, you know. So, but if you've never been to a Greyhound race, let me just tell you what happens is they all line them up in their little boxes just like they do horses, and when they take off, there's this mechanical, they call it the mechanical rabbit, and it basically spins along the rail and stays out just in front of the lead dog, and they're basically chasing that mechanical rabbit all the way around the track, and that's what keeps them chasing it. They're just chasing it. So that's what happens at a Greyhound race. But what was interesting, on this very day, they all take off, and every day they were used to chasing that mechanical rabbit all the way around to the finish line, all the time. But when it got to the end of the straightaway, that mechanical rabbit malfunctioned. It kind of just went poof, and it stopped. It exploded. And these greyhounds who were conditioned, a groundhog race, wouldn't that have been something? Okay, let's reel her back in. The greyhounds, who've been conditioned to chase this mechanical rabbit around and around and around and around, didn't know what to do. And so one of them just took off running, jumped the fence, left the track. A couple of them started chasing each other and scrapping at each other. One just laid down, plopped down right there on the track, and another one turned around and went running back from where in which it came. It was total pandemonium, total chaos. And what I talked about in commencement in that context is if you were a kid who's been going to school since kindergarten, first grade, second grade, you've been chasing the mechanical rabbit every year, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. Now what? Now what do I do? And some of you have a plan. You're going to leap up over the fence, and you're going to go, and you're going to do something in the world. Some of you are in circles. You're scrapping. You're stressed. Some of you, you're like, I'm so tired of school. I just want to lay down. And some of you want to run back from where you came to move into your parents' basement. Well, I think the same thing was going on with the disciples. It's like, man, I have no idea. What are we going to do? Because some denied him. You know, there had to be some real tension and some scrapping going on. You had some that were just exhausted. They put all their eggs in his basket, and now he's crucified. It's like, what? And you had some of them like, well, fellas, it was fun while it lasted. I guess it's back to fishing. Guess we're going to go back to our day jobs. You see, they were chasing this mechanical rabbit, no offense, Jesus, but they had their eyes on him too. And then all of a sudden, he's crucified. Now what? Now what do we do? And so here Jesus is, and he says, here's what's going to happen. Here's what I want you to do. And so he gives them the briefest, most powerful, impactful commencement speech ever. And he says this in verse 18. Jesus came near and said to them, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Resurrection will do that for you. Gives you a lot of authority. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. So here's what's next. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, and in the name of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe everything that I have taught, everything that I have commanded you, and remember this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Jesus is back, and he's basically, they've looked to the past, now they're looking, okay, now what? And so he's giving them the greatest commencement speech ever. He's saying, here's what I want you to do. Go and make disciples. Baptize them. And teach them to obey everything I have commanded. Everything I've taught you guys. Teach them to obey it. I mean, the disciples had graduated. They've looked back from the Jesus School of Ministry. Well, Judas dropped out. The lectures, the classroom instructions, the miracles, in other words, lab time with Jesus. Lab. It's all in the books. I'm sure their grades were all over the place. Not sure who the valedictorian of the first class of 33 AD would have been. Probably John, because he wrote in his book that he was the one Jesus loved the most in John 13:23. Of course, he was the author. I don't know if that was when, you know, anyway, it says the disciple Jesus loved was sitting next to Jesus at the table. But here they were. They had graduated. He's here, and now he's telling them it is time to commence. It is time to get started. And I want you, this is your new life assignment, to go. Go. And make disciples. A disciple, here's what a disciple is, folks. I know it's a churchy word, but here's a disciple. A student. A follower. An apprentice. Go and make students. Make followers. Make apprentices. Go and make followers of me, teaching them, baptizing them, to obey all the things that I have commanded. And he tells them to go. Notice going, the making, the teaching, the baptizing, all of those are action words. They are all words that mean get busy. And we know that's exactly what the class of 33 AD did, because we're here today because they took action. I mean, we're here today all these centuries later because that group of 11 did something. They did it. Now, in church circles, this is known as the Great Commission. If you've grown up in the church, you've heard this. You know, last week we talked about the Great Commandment. This week we're talking about the Great Commission. Anybody ever heard of the Great Commission before? You know, that word's not, Jesus never said it. He didn't call it the Great Commission. That's what it got called later on. That's kind of the chapter heading of this section is the Great Commission. Jesus didn't call it that. Jesus says, just go. Go. Make, teach, baptize. But many of us have heard it. Not only have we heard it, But I would bet many of us have memorized it. Anybody, can you kind of memorize it? And I'm not going to make you stand up and get a sticker or anything like that. But you probably have memorized it. You maybe could even paraphrase it. I learned it in the King James, which is, "Go ye therefore and teach, preach, and baptize." So we've all memorized it. But here's the thing about us, those of us who have been Christ followers for a long time, disciples for a long time, students of Jesus for a long time, is we may have memorized it, we may be familiar with it, but are we doing it? Are we doing it? Francis Chan says, "We're told to go and make disciples, but we often just sit and make excuses." I love how he illustrated it. He says, "You know, when I was a kid, we used to play a game called Simon Says. And Simon Says is one of those games where you tell people to do stuff, and they're out if it's not prefaced with the word Simon Says. So if Simon Says to touch your head, Simon Says to touch, but it's all about Simon Says. It's all about listening and actually doing what Simon says. If you don't do what Simon says, you know, you're out." But he says it's a very simple game. But it's weird how in church, Jesus Says is a totally different game. Because Jesus says, and we don't like it. Not going to do it. Jesus says, we don't do it. You don't have to do it. You just have to memorize it. You just got to study it, memorize it, be able to recite it. He added, Jesus says, go and make disciples. But how many people are actually making disciples? But they've memorized it. They're familiar with it. They have an idea what the Great Commission is. And then he gives this example. He tells of his daughter. He tells his daughter to go clean her room. And she comes back later and says, she's memorized that. Dad, you said, go clean your room. I memorized it. I can even tell you what that means in Greek. As a matter of fact, a little bit later, I'm having all my friends come over and we're going to study and do a deep discussion about cleaning the room. We're going to learn everything we can learn about cleaning the room. I've memorized it. I know exactly what it means in Greek, and we're going to have a study on it. But I didn't clean it. But I know it. I know it. You see, Jesus doesn't tell us to memorize the Great Commission. He says, do it. This is what I want you to do. David Platt once asked, if we're not making disciples, then are we really disciples? So what does a disciple look like, and how do we go make disciples? Well, I'm going to try to wrap this up real quick. And it's a huge, huge topic. So we're not going to get into all of it. So I'm going to try to unpack it and just give you something to chew on, something to think about, because I think we use the word disciples, and it's a big word. And I will tell you this, disciples is something that's long. It's not instant gratification now. You don't do it now. I can't be a disciple now. So let me just tell you that. So I can't even preach it now. It would be a series. There'd be all that kind of stuff. But here's the thing. I want to give you something to chew on. I like how Eric Smith describes making disciples. This is what he says. I think making disciples is more of an interpretation, sold out, or dedication problem. The actual Great Commission does not say go and tell. It says go and make. To make something means an investment of time and energy and resources. To make a disciple involves time, energy, and resources. Just look at Christ. It took him 3 years to make his disciples. And way too many of us are just too busy in our own little world to dedicate what it takes to make a disciple. If each true believer would just spend the time, energy, and resources to make one true disciple, the world would be turned totally upside down. Now let me give you a present day example, and this is not a criticism. This is just to kind of wrap your mind around it and to give you an idea that you all know how to make disciples. You do. You know how to do it. We all do. We all know how to make apprentices, students. We know how to do it. I know there are a lot of fathers and mothers out there that don't go and tell our kids how to play a sport. We go and make little players. Now again, this is not a criticism of those who have their kids in sports or dance or gym, but this is just to show you that you do understand the concept of how to make disciples. We get it. Because what we do is we know it takes time, we know it takes investments, we know it takes a lot of training, being around the diamond, in the batting cages, specialized training camps. And because you didn't just show them a book of the baseball and have them memorize it, here's a book of baseball, go memorize it. You continuously expose them to opportunities, to coaches, to other players, and lots of practices in hopes that they will one day grow up and be like an Andrew Benintendi, a Joey Votto, or a Clayton Kershaw. And you can run the same example for soccer, football, dance, cheerleading, horse, showing any animals. We know how to make disciples. It's just that what we're teaching them to follow or get good at is a little different than what Jesus had in mind. Again, that's not a criticism of those of you who are doing that for your kids. But here's the thing. To go and make a disciple, apprentice, a student of anything requires an investment of time, energy, and resources. And I know we know how to do it. I know we know how to do it. Because we're making athletes. We're making kids that are artistic. We're making kids that are good at dancing, good at writing, good at showing, good at business. We know how to invest. We know how to put resources into to make them good at this, or this. But what are we doing when it comes to making disciples of Jesus Christ? What are we doing to make them followers? You know, as a church family, we can come around you. It is our job. This is what our job is as a church and as a leadership, is to equip you, not spoon feed you, to equip you. It is our job. It is your job then to go home to your workplace or whatever, to create relationships and to make apprentices, followers, disciples of Jesus. And we will do everything we can to provide great opportunities for your kids, for your student ministry. But I can tell you this, parents, we cannot make them disciples unless we're exposed to them. Unless you give us some exposure to them, we cannot help you in making disciples. What about you? What are you doing yourself? What resources, what time, what are you investing in your daily schedule to make you a better disciple, apprentice, student, follower of Jesus? Bob Buford says, a great measuring stick for how we're doing is this. If we are making disciples, the fruit of yours and my work grows on other people's trees. So you want to see how you're doing as making disciples? Then look at what's growing on the people's trees around you. The ones that you have contact with. Look at their trees. See what kind of fruit's on their trees. And that will give you a great measuring stick of how you're doing at making disciples. Now, here's some really good news that could bring a lot of relief to some of you right now. And listen closely. Jesus' commission was not to go and make converts. It was to go and make disciples. His commission isn't for you to go out and convert anybody. Is to make disciples. Jesus said, I made you disciples of me, now you go and make disciples of me. Not you, not your church, not your club, but you go make disciples of me. The Great Commission does not command us to make converts to Christianity or to our agenda. Instead, it says for us to make disciples, followers, and apprentices of Jesus. And there is a difference between a convert and a disciple. See if this looks familiar. I hope you can read it up here. A convert changes religions. A disciple changes masters. A convert follows a system. A disciple follows a person. A convert builds Christendom. Disciples build the kingdom of God. A convert embraces rituals, disciples embraces a way of life. Converts love conversion, disciples love transformation. That's the difference. What's clear about Jesus' commission is that conversion isn't in our job description. That's up to God. God's the one that makes the change. God's the one that does the transformation. And God's the, we can't save anyone. You can't save anyone. That's not on you. That's on him. He gets the glory for that. But he can use you to play a role that once they have made that decision to turn them into apprentices, students, followers of Jesus Christ. And we're here again this morning because the first class of 33 AD made disciples, not converts. So let me close with this little bit of encouragement. Jesus' commitment speech also is bookended with these two great promises. One, he says, I have all the authority. Two, he says, you will have my presence. Now I want you to think about that. Jesus knew the gravity of the command, and that's why he begins and ends with this brief commencement speech with these two powerful promises. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth, and remember, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. He knew what he was asking these disciples to do. He knew that a lot of them were uneducated. He knew that a lot of them were low class, and yet they were going to be going to all these people groups that some of them were going to have higher education or better influence or affluence, and he knew where he was sending them. So what he said is, remember, I have all the authority, and you have my presence. So now go and make disciples. Go. Which should be a great reminder and encouragement to us as we are going, making, baptizing, and teaching. That he still has all the authority, and he also promised his presence. I heard the actor Charlton Heston, when he was making the movie Ben-Hur, he was overwhelmed in the making of the movie because he was trying to master the whole idea of the chariot race. And the chariot race, you know, driving a chariot, that's kind of a huge part of that movie. And he's having a hard time driving a chariot being pulled by four horses. And so he basically came to the director, William Wyler, and said, I think I can get to the point where I can drive the chariot, but I'm not sure I can win the race. And the director said to him, you just stay in the race. I will make sure you win it. I believe that's what Jesus is saying to all of us. If you are a follower of mine, then go make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, in the name of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey all the things that I have commanded you. And remember, I am with you. So you just stay in the race. With my authority, with my power, and with my presence, I got the rest. I will make sure you win this thing. And so, as we're finishing, as we're graduating, I am challenging each and every single one of us to do what we need to do to become fully devoted in becoming a follower, an apprentice, a student of Jesus. We want to be used by him. And he's told us already what he wants us to do. He's already given the commencement speech. Go, baptize, and teach. Make disciples. So I'm going to ask you to stand, sing. Let me pray. God, I thank you that we can actually see what it is clearly that you have called us to do as followers of yours. And so, God, may we do that. May we invest in the things that you would want us to invest in. May we just trust you. God, may we be a church body corporately and a body of individuals who have surrendered our lives to you that will become fully devoted disciples. And I pray this in Jesus' name.